Welcome to our world today.
All right, we're back.
We're back.
How's it going?
It's going all right for me. How about you guys?
Yeah, doing good. Doing good.
All right. So our topic for today is duopolies.
Duopolies. All right. So, we can talk all day about duopolies. Yeah, let me tell you.
So first off, what is a duopoly?
Well, a duopoly is a term used when two companies control the majority of the market share. And with that, you know, you have several examples of that, you know, in current day, you know, Coke, Pepsi, that's a duopoly for you right there. They control whatever 90% of the market, you know, I mean, and they buy up all their smaller competitors. Most people don't realize that, but in the drink industry, a lot of the small guys, they get bought up almost immediately because Coke and Pepsi have just so much money. They just grab them up as soon as possible and add them to the portfolio.
Yeah, people don't really realize just how many other brands are owned by just Coke and Pepsi.
Absolutely.
Or just by a whole nother company in general, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, there's just these big corporations that just own spider webs
conglomerates. Yeah, that's what you would call them. Yeah, they own everything. But with Coke and Pepsi, they're definitely a duopoly. They control the vast majority of the market share within that market. Yeah, absolutely.
So duopoly is just for that. If two suppliers own over 50% of that same market,
as long as the other competitors within that don't make a bigger, you know, market, then you would have an oligopoly. You would have three competing firms that have, you know, the vast majority of the market share roughly, and there's several examples of that too, but we're going to focus on the duopoly part. Two companies, they own the majority of the market share, in most cases more than 75%, but it doesn't have to be more than 75. It can be more than 51 or more, I guess I should say. And so as long as they own more than 50% of the market share combined, then there you go.
Sounds like a marriage. Half of them don't work.
Well, yeah, I imagine. Well, in this case, they're competing too. Like, they're highly competitive. You know, you look at Coke and Pepsi, for instance. I don't know if y'all have seen the sales, you know, where it's four cases of Coke for $12 and all those things.
Well, excuse me. Half of them don't work, or the other, all of them do that do work are usually toxic.
Oh, yeah. 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 Well, I guess you could consider this toxic because, I mean, they go neck and neck, boy. Coke and Pepsi, all about cutting those margins so that they can get that fine line in there for their profits. And that's what they're looking at.
Would Nike and Adidas be considered a duopoly?
I would think that would probably be more of an...
Because you have Puma, but really they don't have... Do they have a big enough market share? Can you Google that real quick to see?
I think that would be more of just a regular market, just because, like, you're talking about the shoe market.
They have high competition between each other.
Oh, yeah. Now, they do have high competition. Absolutely.
But I mean, that's most firms. Do they, between each other, have... If they didn't say have high competition, they weren't, like, at each other's throats, would they, if they combined their market share and kind of did what those kind of companies do?
I mean, there's no doubt they could have merged, and they probably would make
really merge, but,
you know,
like
a pretty vast majority,
but I have like kind of a set rule standard of what they're going to do and what the boundaries are and everything.
Well, you know, that's something to consider. You know, within normal markets, right, you have just regular markets out there all day long, construction, all these type of markets, right? And you're going to have like Lowe's and Home Depot.
Yeah.
In the construction world, they, you know, they're not even a duopoly, even though they control like a huge, you know, portion of most of the market share. You know, they have their other companies out there that rival them.
Yeah.
And so at the end of the day, while they do set the standard a lot of times, they're not necessarily, they'd probably be more in that oligopoly to me because there are so many competing firms. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, you know, in just a base market, you know, you've got tons of firms and they're all going to be competing, highly competitive. And especially in shoes, I mean, fashion industry alone is super highly competitive.
Yeah.
Trends come in, trends go out, boom, that's it, you know.
Well, and the fashion and athletic worlds are commingling a lot as well.
Oh, God, and yeah. You got all these endorsements coming from NFL teams. You got, you know, college teams, Under Armour, you know, they're a high, big competitor within the athletic wear specifically, you know, which Nike is also a high competitor within that, you know, athletic wear market. Adidas also there, several of them. So I mean, I would say that they're probably not necessarily a duopoly just because there's so many competing firms there. But you know, you look at Boeing and Airbus.
Yeah,
okay, it's a great example right there.
Yeah.
They make pretty much all the planes. You know what I mean? Like that, pretty much all the planes. And
Boeing, doesn't they have like the biggest government contract for...
They're the largest government contract holder in the world. Yeah, mm-hmm. by far. And they hold the most classified contracts. Yeah. So at the end of the day, they're massive.
Which one?
Boeing. Yeah. Airbus is coming up, though. So Airbus actually started, you know, I used to know a lot more about Airbus. It's been a minute and I didn't do enough research on it. I'm sorry. But if what I remember, Airbus was a very small company, right? Mm. And they started competing for those contracts with Boeing. And they started getting a few of them because they basically claimed that Boeing was a monopoly. And at the time, they pretty much were. Right. Like, yeah. I mean, they didn't have any rivals. And so Airbus came in there and got the government to allow them, you know, some contracts too, and allow commercial contracts to come in, you know, different places. And they just grew it right up and they became, you know, Boeing's biggest competitor. When was Airbus founded?
1970.
70? Yeah. Yep. And then I think Boeing was well before then. So...
their headquarters are in the Netherlands.
Yep. That's the truth. Yeah. Airbus is a really big company, you know, and they
were founded in 1916.
I
could definitely see why the government would pick Boeing as far as like giving them more classified and like the top secret contracts because their headquarters and their company is based as an American
in
company.
America. Whereas
like
yep.
Airbus is like not
absolutely and yeah. I mean so Boeing's been around, you know, like Jake said,
just physical locations. Like you're talking about data that they might be possibly be able to be accessed from their servers over in another country that like,
oh, yeah.
like we don't have jurisdiction. Like it's a huge risk to have that type of classified data. Like they would be like, it's just hoops to jump through, you know
what
yeah
I mean? Oh yeah, like, yeah, there's no so, doubt.
Like, they would be like really complicated. That's why I can understand why the government would go with
yeah
there just should be another American company. There should be another American company competing with Boeing.
Well, I mean,
there are other American companies competing. It's just they're
very small.
They're small.
And that's the problem that you run into. They can't scale. Like, so there are two big factors to understand with duopolies. You have barriers to entry and you have economies of scale. Okay. And barriers to entry, when you start talking about that, like, okay, if I just say that I had $100 million right now, okay, mm-hmm. I could go out here and I could build a plane. I could start an entire company to build the most lucrative, nice, most fancy aircraft on the planet, okay? Mm-hmm. And it would probably rival one of Boeing's planes. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it probably would. Can I do that more than once? Probably not, because I don't have economies of scale, okay? I can't scale this thing up and be able to produce 100 of them a year and compete with the 747. You know what I mean? Like, there's just no way. Yeah. I don't have enough capital. I don't have enough know-how. I mean, these guys have been doing it since 1916. I'm definitely not going to beat them in intelligence. I can assure you with their business model and trying to drive those margins down and be able to remain profitable. You
Is
know
there
what
a
I
way
mean?
To find out how much an air parts manufacturing facility, like on average cost? Like, I know like Intel's building a new, like I know Intel's building a new chip manufacturing and they're estimating how much it's going to cost. Is there like a
here's the revenues that they get.
And that's in billions. So, yes.
Oh yeah. I was just trying to find that specific number. You know what I mean? To see how much it would cost. Cause if you like getting your own manufacturing fab down is going to be one of the biggest, like if you can do that, you can compete like at a certain scale.
Well, and that's the point is, you know, you're at a certain scale. You're not going to be where they're at anyway. You know what I mean? Like your scale is so much smaller. You're never going to be able to scale to their size.
Correct.
Airbus did it through, I mean, since 1970.
Boeing owns their own fabrications. Really, is that the case?
Do what
is
now?
That the case where Boeing owns their own fabrications and everything?
Sure. Yeah. 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 They do everything.
Oh, yeah. They're considered a monopoly.
They're considered a duopoly.
Duopoly.
Yep.
Okay.
With Airbus.
What would be the legality of like if the government gave contracts to say like if a contractor won another company and said this is how much like we have the design and we know the fabrication process and everything, like they know how everything works and they design it like this and they say this is how much it would cost, but the fabrication facility would be like they would have to contract Boeing's fabrication. Like
they would never do that.
Exactly. I know. That's what I'm saying. If they're considered like a minority, can the government step in and say, hey, you've got to, like, as far as a regulatory process, look, until they like get, or would the government come in and subsidize a company to be able to build their own fabs so that way they would be
they
competition?
They do that, actually. Okay. And that's the government does that for a lot of different things. They do have, and I cannot remember the name of it right now, but when I do, you know, things for audit and stuff, we have to look at these certain things. But, you know, they have a clause in there that allows them so much. I believe it's cost of money is what they call it or something like that. But they give them money back for building their facility. And it's because there's nobody else in that space to really compete and have a bid process. OK, so they're getting inflated prices like with Boeing. At the end of the day, Airbus is their only rival. They could collude at any moment and drive the price of aircrafts sky high if they wanted to, because literally they have the government, you know,
by the balls.
Yeah,
that's why.
That's
why it would be in their best interest to like subsidize other smaller companies to build. Like higher end fabs, so that way they would drive up competition, and then they would drive the market cost
within
down.
That,
and that way they don't have them by the balls anymore because there's healthy competition now. Like the government would then subsidize healthy competition, and then when everyone's good, you're like
they definitely give contracts out to multiple U.S. countries.
It's just the big ones that make the most money are pretty much typically going.
You got to understand
they have to actually go for and bid for the actual.
Yeah. And
contract.
The other thing is, so like when you get these big contracts, let's say it's, you know, multi-billion dollar contract. OK, Boeing's not doing all the work. They're just doing the majority of the work.
Yeah, they contract
out a lot of it subcontract wise to smaller, more innovative firms who can make and produce that specific part for their aircraft more efficiently than their own fabricators.
Understood. Yeah.
At a scale. Okay.
At a scale. Yeah.
At whatever scale they need, because they're doing tons and tons of different aircraft each year. You know what I mean? And so there's no way. I mean, I guess they probably could, but it probably wouldn't be beneficial for them to actually do all of the work in house necessarily. Well, they would rather subcontract out more of that innovative.
What's the latest biggest plane or the most popular plane Boeing is running right now, as far as like
747 Max has had a lot of problems.
I know, but like, what about the 787 or the
them and Airbus actually has the largest
the
plane.
Which one is it? I can't remember the number.
I can't remember
what are the numbers,
but Airbus has the largest plane, or did have the largest plane for a bit. And I cannot remember how big it was, but it was massive. It was like a double decker, and
I couldn't imagine them building more than like, I don't think there's a thousand of those around. You know what I mean?
No, they will only build just a few a year. It's like a ship manufacturer, you know, like they're not building a thousand ships a year. They're building like 10 ships a year.
Okay,
you know
they can
be 10. Like,
okay.
Maybe.
I was thinking like 2 or 3 a year. Like, yeah,
depends
that's
on how big
saying.
They are. Like an aircraft carrier, they might
like,
build one every
5
right. years. You see what I mean? Like they're not building them every single year. You could never get all the work done. They're massive projects. And like with Boeing, I mean, they may sit in those hangars, and you know, I mean, they have dedicated space all over the United States where they just have these huge, just massive acre facilities, and there's only one plane in there. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's it. They got one plane, they move it through the assembly line all the way to the end, and then they've got another one coming
around.
That's
behind why it makes
it. You
sense
know what
to
I mean?
Have be like, if you're an aerospace engineer, your path of employment is pretty clear at that point. You simply just get your degree, you open up your own firm, and then you produce a part that you can engineer and fab, and then you just get a contract with Boeing, subcontract out to them.
If you wanted to be an entrepreneur,
So like that would be the entrepreneurial way of doing it. Once you get your education as an aerospace engineer,
sure,
you have a pretty clear path as how to get your money back for investing in that.
Yeah, and I mean go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say back to duopolies and actually how duopolies affect the market, and going back to more of duopolies and not, I just wanted to bring us back to our topic.
No, I agree with that. Well, no lie, with this Airbus and
Boeing
example.
If you'd like to round it off.
Yes, right here. Okay, you've got all these smaller firms and they are, you know, competing for these subcontracts, right? And those are rolling up to the largest firm, which is Boeing or Airbus, right?
Yeah.
That in itself helps with the competition measure, because how much are they charging to build the bigger plane, right? How much are they charging to build these parts that are going to go into the bigger plane? That bigger plane is then going to have some profit put on it, right?
Yeah.
But that's going to be capped at some level. Like, I mean, if Airbus can build it for $100 million and Boeing can build it for $120 million, which one are you going to get? You're probably going to go with Airbus. You know what I mean? Like every time. But that all trickles down from those smaller subcontractors and what they can produce it for. You know what I mean? Like how much they're bidding and proposing on these different contracts. And then that roll up of the assembly of all those parts goes to that main manufacturer, and they're putting it all together, you know, basically. And then they're selling it to whoever. Most of the time it's the government. A lot of these though, like Boeing, even, you know, I mean, a lot of it's commercial too. You know, you've got American Airlines, they hold a lot of Boeing planes. You know, you've got several other airlines that have to buy these things and they have to be serviced year over year. Those service contracts is something that a lot of people don't think about either. I mean, you've got to service a plane, you know, we've still got planes from 1970 and, you know, they're in circulation. It's just like, scratch your head, you know, like what the hell? We couldn't get any better planes. Like, but they still work.
They're maintenance and still working.
I mean, there are, but they are supposed to be engineered for like lasting like a really long time, aren't they? Like,
sure. Yeah.
So it's not like uncommon for that.
No, I mean, they're starting to phase them out more, you know, obviously.
But yeah, they have a phase out process, but the amount of cost that it takes to build a plane, they have to engineer it to last a long time in order to get money back out of it and then make
absolutely
a profit on it.
I mean, they're making all their money on those service contracts after it's built.
Exactly.
But that actual building process is where you get a lot of duopoly. It's the control of that entire supply chain.
Yeah.
All the way to the finished product, you know, and they're controlling it by controlling the subcontractors who are building the smaller parts to then assemble it, you know, at their factory. And so that's all it boils down to. So and that goes across the board, you know, Android and iOS, you know, Apple.
They seem like a much more clear duopoly. Like,
there's no doubt. Yeah, they're
but Boeing almost seems like that's definitely a duopoly when you look at the market share. But there's also like, I could see a way as an individual to enter into that market fairly easily.
That one's a little harder.
If I went through the process to entry are a little bit lower if you take the educational difficulty.
But
here's the thing, when you start talking about barriers to entry too, like we're talking about barriers to entry into the aerospace market, okay? Yeah. And while they have come down substantially over years because of the government subsidizing, you know, smaller firms to build parts for these, that's still, you could never build a company right now, I can assure you, like unless you've just got an astronomical lot of money.
Yeah.
You can't build a company to rival Boeing.
Never. I'm not implying that. Yeah.
No. You could enter the market.
I was mainly saying that like if you're like, okay, I want to build, like I want to help design and make airplanes or whatever as a person. And then you have another person that's like, okay, I want to help make and design like an operating system. Like
it's gonna be very hard.
So like, well, like here's the thing. As for a like you basically have those similar situations where they will contract out like software engineers that work on those things. And then they're like kind of absorbed by either one of those two things.
Exactly.
But like the odds of them trying to go out and make like their own operating system, like Windows died. Like the Windows operating system's dead.
Yeah.
Like Windows couldn't even do it. They're a billion-dollar company.
Absolutely.
To enter into it.
Like it's any just controlling.
Little guy that thinks they're going to try to enter into the company and get it. Like, because the consumers kind of control that side of the market.
Oh yeah, it's like, whatever they're gonna buy. I mean, at the end of the day, that could be the same way.
Because that's what controls what they're doing.
Okay, so with going back to draw the same way between the two examples that we just gave. So Boeing and Airbus, who is their consumer? Okay, and that is either the government or commercial airlines.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it. Those are their only two consumers, right?
Yeah.
They're gonna tell you what they want. Okay, and then you're gonna build it. Like, yeah. I mean, there's no other way around it. Same way with Android and iOS. If they don't like your operating system, they're not going to buy it, which is what happened to Windows. They came into the market like, hey, we got this great operating system. Here it is. Boom. Nobody bought it. They quit.
Yep.
They can't compete. You have Android. You have iOS. People like Android and they like iOS. That's it. You know, and they're one or the other. They're not both. You know what I mean? Like very distinct one or the other, you know?
Well, like, so I guess the differentiator, where I was kind of getting at was like, even though those two are considered duopolies, right? You could say if collectively everyone like wanted to say, all right, let's all look at these two companies and decide how to solve the problem. It would be significantly easier to figure out the Boeing situation because the customer base is like the government and they're just looking at the best plan for the best product and they have their decision-making factors are a lot more clear versus the Apple and iOS decision-making factors of them.
No doubt.
It is a much more complicated problem to solve in
your
terms
marketing
of like how you're trying to figure out how to kill that duopoly.
Is way more directed at that Boeing Airbus than it would be at a single entity, right?
Yeah.
Mostly the government or the commercial
airline
industry.
Exactly. That market is focused around that customer base.
Absolutely.
Like, and so if you can determine how that customer base makes purchasing decisions, then you can influence how to get
that's
that.
That's what they
like,
do. Absolutely.
So that's like kind of the thing if you really want to solve the problem, if
they make
a problem,
their money off of
you could solve this Boeing problem because even us just like thinking about that for a second, we can go, oh yeah, we can see how it's much easier to solve the Boeing problem than the
Apple. Absolutely.
And I believe that Boeing and Airbus probably only control maybe what, only a little above 50%, while
Actually, they control about 99%.
I was about to say, when you mentioned Airbus, I was like, I've heard of them, but not really. Because there is so many other companies,
and I figured that that other 50% was owned by those other companies. So, and then iOS, though, with iOS and Android.
Those two companies approach those two, those are pretty much different dominant philosophies everywhere.
There's no one really uses anything else.
But you can still go
to another aircraft company and get another contract through them exclusively or through them elsewhere.
Yeah, and like,
but usually it doesn't happen that way because government goes through the Boeing and Airbus, and then that just goes down.
Yeah, and like the decision making for like the airplane market is going to be who can make the best airplane for the cheapest price. Basically,
Well, cheapest or just the best airplane.
The best airplane, 100%. That's the number one thing. The best airplane for the cheapest price. I'm not like saying you like that's number one. You don't compromise on quality, but just that's how the market is determined. Like if these two companies can make the equal best airplane, you're gonna go with the one who makes it for cheaper.
I was trying to fact check my 99%. But then
like Apple and Android, those duopolies, their consumer base, like. Especially with Apple having set themselves up not only as a tech company, but as a lifestyle brand. Yeah,
99%.
It's like a.
They are 99%.
99% of the market share.
No.
But yeah, what I was getting at.
That gets rid of my theory in my head about it then. Never mind.
But yeah, so like those two companies, in order to solve the issue, they like people almost approach those two as like a philosophy. Like you have two clans almost. Like
they do. Yeah, like, they're absolutely.
Like the way that Google approaches how like you interact with the device is like a different, like, they view that as a different way and treat their customers a different way than like Apple treats their customers.
It's like Alabama and Auburn down here.
It is.
For whatever reason, like just which side, but like,
yeah, you're not wrong. Yeah. And another one that most people don't think about, you know, we've got Coke and Pepsi, we've got Airbus and Boeing.
And
here.
Coke is a taste thing. Like, I don't know, like, but like at the same time, I'm like, who the fuck drinks Pepsi?
Yeah. Well, that's just a Southern thing too. Like we're more Coke down here, you know, I just feel like more people, but now there are people out there that will not touch a Coke. Like they just won't.
I mean, I don't really drink soft drinks to begin with, but at the same time,
I'm the same way. I mean, I'm going to pick Coke every time. Like it's just never going to happen. I don't like Pepsi. It's too sweet.
But yeah.
Dr. Pepper's not bad. Yeah. But my point a Pepsi back product to or this, a Coke so we've product? Got Boeing and it's we've Coke. Got Airbus. Is. Okay. And then we've got Android and we've got Apple iOS.
Yeah.
And we had Coke and Pepsi.
Yeah.
Another one that people don't think about is your debit card. Who?
Visa, MasterCard.
Visa.
That's it. They control 90% of the market share in all debit credit transactions.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, there's you two really big ones. You know what I mean? There's some really big ones right there. Because, I mean, they were built, I can't remember the years that they were both started, but I have to look it up. But either way, point being, Visa, MasterCard are huge. And they control 90% of all the transactions.
Yeah. And they basically have contracts with like the banks and the
consumers, processing
payment, like all that. So they're like the intermediate, like a middleman intermediary.
Yeah. What year?
1958.
58. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. That's Visa, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's Visa.
And those decision-making factors are done by transaction rates and all that stuff of how like you pick which process.
MasterCard was probably close.
They were in 1966.
Yep. So they're very close right there. These two guys guaranteed when they first started, this was right after the 50s, right? Right after the Madden.
They were 1966 as Interbank Card Association and then 1979 as MasterCard.
As MasterCard. So yeah.
They just changed names.
This was about the time you had
it's definitely a better name.
You had credit cards. You had plastic coming out. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like people, you didn't have that before that. You just had cash.
Ledgers, yeah.
You know, or a check. You know what I mean? And like even when they started, they were still checks. You know what I mean? Like you still wrote them up. Like you didn't scan them. You pressed anyway. It doesn't matter.
The carbon copy.
Yes. You had the carbon copies. Like it was way different than it is today.
Yeah.
And throughout the 70s and 80s, like that was a big deal. You know, the 80s was a big boom for credit in general. Like, I mean, that was huge coming out of the 70s recession. And then boom, you know, you had this huge boom through the 80s and 90s and all of that was plastic. You know, it was all credit. I mean, every bit of it. And all these two companies dominated because they were already built. And I guarantee you Visa, obviously being the oldest, they were there. MasterCard, whoever, you know, founded that and everything. He was like, I see what they're doing. I can do that. And he just started doing it too. And now you have a duopoly. So that's how it goes.
There it is.
Yeah. But in general, duopolies are, they can be bad and people don't realize that either. You would think that having two highly competitive firms would constantly drive the price down, okay? Because they're trying to get more of the market share from the other one, right? Until because that's where they're making meeting. Profit. Well, yes, and that's the problem. You have a collusion that happens. The government's tried to stop that. It's illegal to collude like that. And, that's price gouging at some level. But who's going to say if you went and met with so-and-so, you know, in the back room of a, you know, Chinese restaurant or some crazy shit. You know what I mean?
We just nobody knows. We just happen to both know where the best tempura chicken is in town.
Yeah, we in a 90s action movie.
We just happen to know that.
Pretty much. Like, I mean, you wouldn't know. And so at the end of the day, they could very well do that. You know, they could very well collude. They could very well drive the price up. Now, here's another thing that you wouldn't really recognize is the fact that are you paying too much for it? Well, we don't know because we don't really know what it costs. Okay. You don't know what it costs them to process those transactions, Visa, MasterCard. You have no idea. How much does it cost?
I can tell you at this point. I can tell you
because you don't have the books. And so you can't know. You can't know.
Right. I mean, okay. So at this point, doing all this is done electronically. So your cost would simply be...
Well, it's electricity. that's going to be their main upfront cost.
Is servers infrastructure to store the data and be able to do that. But it's just server. So it's computer server exactly. cost. So that... You can figure out how much a server is pretty quickly. And like with SSDs, like you can make them pretty compact.
Large publicly traded companies. So their costs are on the internet. Like you can go get them from Edgar. You know what I mean? Like you can go look at the Edgar database and you could pull all of their costs. Okay. I mean, I'm not saying that you couldn't. I'm just saying in general, like you don't actually know how much it costs them. You know what I mean? Like you can get an idea from their financial statements, things like that. But to sit down and do what their internal analysts do, who are literally look at their internal auditors, they go in and they look at these processes and they say, it costs this much. We need to find a way, you know, to make this better, you know, because like this is costing too much. We need to bring that down so that we can make more profit. And for us as an outsider looking in, all you got is their financial statements, their big picture. You know what I mean? Like you don't have those fine details like this specific server, this specific, what is that thing called, GPU or whatever?
I wouldn't even say it's a specific thing. I would be saying, looking at an analyst, I would be saying, all right, so would cost be determined by transactions, like how fastly they can process transactions, because then that is like,
instantaneous, more or less. You try to get to
so then they would look at like, okay, so servers wise, you look at have hard drives and then they moved all over to SSDs. This is something that happened like 8-10 years ago, probably.
Yeah.
But like just in general, when they moved all over from hard drives to SSDs, that significantly reduce their costs of what it was like, how to actually do what they were doing before, like what it cost them per one. So then their profit, like that margin just increased.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Significantly.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's just going, that margin is going to significantly increase because at this point, the law of diminishing returns is going to start kicking in because stuff's just getting so fast now that like you're not,
everything is getting faster and smaller.
You're only looking at every year. If they did decide to upgrade every year, they would be only looking at like a 5-6% increase. So what these guys are looking at to do is a 4-year cycle. So you upgrade every 4 years, your hardware equipment.
Yeah.
And then so you're getting a 20% increase every 4 years by just upgrading your entire infrastructure to that latest hardware. And that you just understand that's how it's going to work out based on like those just.
Well, I mean, that makes sense. Like they're going to look and do whatever makes sense for them and most efficient and effective. But ultimately, you would think back to the economic problem here is just that normally you would think that would drive prices down. But obviously with collusion,
how big is that market share?
Drive it up.
Is the overall cap? Like, how big is the cap? Because I'm just wondering, like,
for which one?
Just Visa and Master. Like, just the whole, that whole, like, how big is that market cap?
Let's see. I did have it up earlier.
The only reason I'm saying that is because there's a lot of billionaires out there. You know what I mean?
There's a lot of billionaires. There's a lot of billionaires, no doubt. I mean, if you look at the amount of money that corporations control in the United States, $1 billion is like pennies.
$3 billion, okay.
Yeah. So, MasterCard. So it's probably close to half a trillion.
All right. So Jeff Bezos would be the only motherfucker that could just single-handedly decide that he wants to fuck with these guys.
Well, he couldn't.
I mean, I know. No.
He's only got like 150 billion.
But
he can't even start to. They got a combined almost $1 trillion. Now, Amazon as a whole, I mean, Amazon's a $1.3 trillion company. They overtake their market share, no doubt.
So if the top five richest people pulled their, I wouldn't even say that cap, like that market cap or whatever. Like that's not even that. But I'm just saying that like the hardware to build that infrastructure and everything.
Yeah,
that is not that difficult in terms of like cost effective. If you're a billionaire, it's just a dollar amount that you say, all right, and then you're going to make your money back. So then you would say, all right, I can build this infrastructure in this amount of time. I'll eat that cost until it's built, and then have a contract set up for these banks and start negotiating contracts in those 2 years about what we'll be able to do.
If you were going to do something like this, and then you can eat your
market share.
The other thing to that is, you know, you've got...
So I don't... Yeah, I definitely could be done.
Yeah. You have brand recognition, and not just brand recognition with this. You've also got history of it works.
That's why that's why my example was with the top five richest, because those are like very prominent people. Yeah. And if everyone knows that they're starting their own payment processing to compete with these to help drive costs down or whatever, and it's going with like, and they got a big deal with Bank of America or Wells Fargo or whatever. Yeah. And it's like, okay, they're going to like, that's going to be the test for it.
Yeah.
Basically. Like, and then they'd start eating them. That would be their entry to eat the market share. If
they wanted to do something to try to penetrate this market, sure. That would be how you could do it.
Okay.
Blockchain has been with this specific transaction.
That's a whole other ball game.
The point is though, blockchain in general has been implemented with these two companies already. They're already using it because it's easier. What I mean? It's much easier to navigate a blockchain. Yeah, than why it is. Not?
You got
to
use what's out there. Use the technologies out there. That's
been the most innovative thing to come out, you know, within processing transactions. We're talking about that specifically, not with duopolies in general. Okay.
Yeah, that's a whole other subject.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're not going to get into that. Yeah. But point being, duopolies are they exist in the world. They're just two firms that control the majority of the market share, such as the examples that we've given here. And they typically either are trying to compete at a level that would bring down that marginal cost. Okay. That cost of the product, they're going to try to bring that down to raise their profits. Okay. Mm-hmm. They're also going to be competing against each other. So they're constantly either going to be lowering their price to try to beat the competitor and get more of the market share for that given period. Okay. Mm-hmm. Or they collude and then the price goes up.
Yeah.
Almost evenly. You know what I mean? Like one may. Now, this is another funny example within economics. If they did collude, one could be like, all right, guys, this week y'all can have it. Next week, we're going to take it, you know, like we're going to raise our price a little bit. You guys raise your price a little bit.
Little give and take, a little.
Coke and Pepsi is a great example. You know, they come out with those sales. You get four cases for $12.
Oh, yeah.
Do you ever see those happen at the same time?
No.
Why not? Because one of them knows that the other one's got it going. Mm-hmm. And they ain't trying to steal it away just yet, because they're trying to wait for them to go back up on their price so that they can drop that thing back in there too and they can make some money, you know? And that's all it boils down to. And they didn't even have to collude for that to happen. You know what I mean? That's just common sense. Like, hey, they're beating us right now. What do we do? Drop our price. You know what I mean? That's the only thing we can do, but we got to wait for them to get over with their sale and then we'll do it. You know what I mean? That way we control that little bit for that short period of time. It's just a
seesaw of making money.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And everybody's happy with it.
Sure. And I mean, you know, a lot of companies, even especially within this, they'll take a loss if they have to.
Absolutely.
In order to beat the competitor.
Absolutely. Oh yeah. That's literally how Amazon was built.
Yep. They will take a loss in a heartbeat.
Especially you gotta take a little loss to make some money sometimes.
No doubt.
Amazon has proved that. Yeah. Especially like just
all to about market share.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They didn't even really start making all that money until they got that Amazon Web Services contract. Really?
Well, that put them on the map.
That was that jump right there.
They were the huge. They were the largest. They were retailer already
bigger.
Anyway,
they were already big. Yeah.
That put them as being the largest company, like right there with Apple. You know, I mean, then Apple's still bigger, but and I don't know how, but anyway, you know.
Amazon. I can tell you how.
I know how, but
30% of all transactions off the App Store.
Oh, I know. Yeah, they control. they were very good at monopolizing what they do.
Mm-hmm.
There is no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not going to get on that because I'm not a big fan of Apple. But anyway, point being, duopolies can collude. They should not, and it is somewhat illegal for them to. In fact, I think it is specifically illegal for them to collude on that level, you know, like, to set prices.
Like corporate espionage, not really that much, but yeah. Maybe kind of like that.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you would be, you know, one going after the other one, basically, and then, or, hey, you know, hey, guys, they just meet in the back room like, hey, you know.
Hey, we're going to do this year. You guys can do this year. We're going to make both the same amount of money. Sound good?
Yeah.
Sound good.
Fix all those right. profits, you know? Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, that's what it's all about, is returning money back to the investors and being able to pay, you know, substantial amounts of money to your employees and then also reach those bonus levels that that probably are created within the company. Most of those used to be tied to stock, you know, stock options, basically, mm-hmm. within the pay system. Companies have stopped that a lot because there was a lot of manipulation within the financial statements so that the stock price would go up and they would get paid out more. And so a lot of companies, and I do mean a lot, have reduced the amount of stock options that are going on now within executive compensation packages, specifically because of the manipulation that happened in the early 2000s. You had Enron, you had WorldCom, you know, Madoff. He just died the other day.
Yeah, him.
Yeah. He just died the other day, though. And, you know, he was the largest, he had the largest Ponzi scheme ever known to history. I mean, $24 billion, I believe is what it was or something. It was amazing. He just kept paying off his investors, and he had literally created the financials for all these different things. But back to what we were talking about, you know, the stock options, they basically reduced them because of all that manipulation. Like, they just make up invoices and act like they sold stuff or do sell stuff to a company knowing that company is about to return it. You know what I mean? And they'll do it at the end of the period so that it goes as a sale. And then that next period, they'll just make it up.
Well, we're going to have to wrap up here, but going over Bernie Madoff's Ponzi scheme in the future may be a cool little episode to do.
No doubt.
That might be a fun one to do.
That's the I did a paper on him. Yeah, for accounting.
We go over some he was old a Ponzi schemes.
Or genius.
go over past like business, white collar stuff. Or
absolutely, we can do that. Not a problem. Fun. Not a problem. Well, right. Duopolies, guys. What do y'all think? Everybody good with it?
Yeah, I understand. Oh yeah, a lot better than I did before.
Absolutely. I'm glad to do it.
All right, signing off here.
Our World Today is out.
All right, see ya.
Everything discussed in this podcast is related to current events around the world. We are only expressing our opinions on the events taking place and in no way are giving advice or counsel on any issue. We do not condone violence or breaking the law in any way. We do not feel obligated to tailor our free speech, and we strive to report the facts about the events discussed herein.